Last week, I received a text on the same night we published our episode, and the text was from our number one listener since day one, Danny from California. He asked if we had PTSD from our trip. Tommaso immediately came up with a fitting acronym of post-travel stress disorder. And yes, I guess we did. We think there are two scenarios of returning from a vacation in Italy. One, you had a great time, but you're happy to be home and in your own bed. Two, you are somewhat annoyed. You are no longer living la dolce vita. Benvenuti to Kimberly's Italy, a podcast about our love of the culture, history, cuisine, architecture, art, and everything else that makes Bell'Italia so beloved around the globe. My name is Kimberly Holcomb, and I am here with Il Favoloso Famoso, you name it, Tommaso.
Il Happy Favoloso Tommaso. Back in good mood. Puppies and
chocolate, you said.
Puppies and chocolate, puppies and kittens, all good.
You promised to be happy and upbeat the entire episode.
The crankiness is gone.
Grazie Dio. Well, I hope we didn't come across as too negative, but I think we might have been, you know, a little crabby when we recorded our episode last week. And that is because we were tired from our return to the States with the delays we mentioned of trains, planes, and that never-ending wait for our luggage to finally find its way to the carousel. And like most people after a long vacation, you get home to an empty refrigerator, which requires a trip to the grocery store. And in our case, that's off island. So like, ugh, hassle. Bills that have to be paid and all of the minutiae of everyday life and work that has to be addressed.
And as I used to say, after coming home from every single sail and regatta, re-entry is a bitch. And that was coined by my good friend Johnny Mack about 30 some odd years ago, when we'd be in the Med or the Caribbean or somewhere doing a regatta, and you get home and it's Monday morning and you're like, desk, ugh.
Can I just add, actually, that when you return from a regatta in Europe or the Caribbean, like you just mentioned, your re-entry mood was like much bitchier than when you came back from those regattas in Miami. No offense to Florida, fine state, but you know, just doesn't have the same allure.
The lifestyle delta right. was very different. And this time, I think it was because our last week in Venezia was fantastic. But on the flight home, we talked about the insane amount of tourists that were there. And the next day, we recorded the episode. And I was still a little bit cranky.
Yes, you are.
But I'm not. Puppies and chocolate.
Appunto.
Okay.
All right. But again, we deliberately shared that with you because we want to be genuinely honest and prepare you for what the tourist destinations can be like. I do the same for all of my clients who engage me to plan their trips. If they want to go to the greatest hits of Rome, Florence, and Venice, I explain everything to them beforehand and then they're prepared. As a matter of fact, last summer I planned a trip for the nicest woman from the Washington, D.C. area, and she took her sister-in-law and niece to those three cities in July, no less. I cautioned her about the heat and the crowds, and she said, okay, good to know, but it's the only time we have, so we'll just deal with it. They sent me tons of selfies, smiling, happy, sweaty, dripping with sweat, but they had a great time. So honesty is the best policy as far as I'm concerned. So yes, last week we shared what we witnessed in Venezia in terms of the crowds and the types of crowds. But in today's episode, we're going to be all about the happy, upbeat, positive parts of our time in Belle Venezia.
Chocolate brioche. Happy, happy.
Just think of that every day. Dio mio. Allora, let's jump into this episode. By the way, we're recording this road trip in reverse. We'll just work our way back to the beginning of the trip and share it all, including some places that most of you may never have heard of, but will most likely put on your list after you do. So for our stay in Venezia, we decided to rent an apartment because I have so many clients that travel as a family or small group of friends, and they request that I find them a rental to be more affordable and fit everyone. So I thought I should have some personal experience with that as well. And what a gem our place turned out to be. I work with some Italian rental companies, but this one in Venice, I found online myself and contacted the owner directly. It was an old converted glass blowing factory. Well, what isn't old in Venice, right? But this one was very old and it was renovated so well. It was tasteful, bright and cheery, a bit of the old mixed with the new. It was just the perfect combination.
And the best part of it was its location, because you could not get further away from the crowds if you tried.
No.
And it was on a dead end.
Yes, a dead end to a canal.
Yeah. So we actually sat outside one day, our last day, having an Aperol spritz.
Chatting with the owner's husband.
Yes.
It was awesome.
And people came down and they walked right by us. And we let him walk by with it. We had this little smile on our face. They're like, what are they smiling at? They went down to the end, hit the wall and went, oops, oh. Yeah.
Finally, we gave up and we started telling people about 20 meters back, this ends here. And they're like, oh, okay, thank you.
And as a person who likes to navigate, the woman who owned the apartment sent us almost like a play-by-play playbook for getting there.
By photographs.
Yes, because it would have been next to impossible.
Right. It was brilliant. Actually, at one point, she put in this, you know, PDF type document. And this photo, when you see the angel mounted on halfway up the wall, pointing to the right, she's pointing your way.
I remember seeing that.
Wasn't that great? We burst out laughing. We're like, this is going to be good.
Because the angel was in the middle of like a 4 foot wide.
Not even.
Yeah, it was narrow.
The owner, she was so fantastic. She met us and had a very thorough book on where to find a grocery store or the fruit and vegetable markets for each day, where the closest boat stops are, and where to deliver all the recyclable products, which she showed us are separated into specific colored bags. And you drop them off at a boat pickup spot. And we continue to be so impressed how most of Europe recycles. It's not an effort anymore. It's just part of life and they all do it. Hence her explaining to us how to do it, when to do it, which was daily, and where to put it. And that didn't take us back at all thinking, oh, we have to go take this recycle every day. Yes, it's part of life there. And it's so efficient and so great. And it actually, well, I'm not even going to go into that because, again, today, nothing negative. It's all happy. So carrying on.
Well, I think one of the things that makes it easier there, too, is like when you go to buy vegetables and things like that, you're shopping for a day or two.
Exactly.
You're not shopping for a week and you don't have all the wrappings.
Yes, because they don't wrap it in anything.
And you bring generally your own shopping bags.
Yes.
And you take them. So it's a lot easier.
It definitely is.
Continuing on the positive note.
Bravo. Okay. We're on a happy roll here. Ready? I'm carrying on. So we did indeed go to the grocery store that very first afternoon and stocked up. And yes, we bought wine and Aperol and Prosecco in the grocery store along with the necessities like coffee and milk.
What do you mean? That's a necessity.
Exactly.
You're in Italy.
Right. However, travel tip here for all of you who may take a rental and therefore go to a grocery store. And I think that most of the rentals in a place like Venezia or a congested little village, meaning medieval village, offer or have these wheeled carts that you all take, like we had them in Manhattan. So the little carts you wheel to the grocery store. So here's the travel tip. When you enter the grocery store, do not take it with you down the aisles. Put it to the side of the checkout counters. Do not take it in the aisle and put what you're going to purchase in that cart and then go to the checkout. And I'm saying this because We were reprimanded by the woman.
You were reprimanded. You're the travel planner expert. I wasn't.
Where were you?
I was with you, but I was really right. passive, just following
passive
your orders.
Passive aggressive. Okay, well, she reprimanded me and told me quite loudly so that everyone behind us in line knew we were the guilty tourists. I apologized in line saying I was unaware of that and I'm so sorry, to which she responded again, very loudly, starts flailing her arms and pointing toward the entrance and saying, there are signs everywhere that tell you not to do so. I was like, oopla, mi dispiace, I'm sorry again. So there you have it. I'm trying to save you guys from making the same mistake. Now, during our walk back from the grocery store to the apartment, I took video of Tommaso walking in the maze of Cali. Cali is one sidewalk, Cali is plural, so these little sidewalks, with the rolling cart behind him. And I put a video up on Instagram of this happening, and so many people called that out and said, is that sound the noise of clinking wine bottles in your cart?
Yes, it was.
One woman said, music to my ears. It was so funny. So after we unpacked our clothes and the grocery supplies, we took off for dinner in the San Polo Sestieri. And again, Sestieri means neighborhood, a different area. In order to get to San Polo, we had to cross the Rialto Bridge, but it wasn't crowded because it was late and most people were probably in restaurants by then having their dinner. We had a much later reservation. So it was a warm night. We got to this restaurant in San Polo and we sat out in the back in their giardino that was, it was like an oasis when he brought us back there.
I know. When he said, you want to sit in the front, I'm like, no, let's go to the garden. You could just see through the window.
Right.
It looked really nice.
Right.
And so it was
actually picture perfect.
Again, maintaining the positive note on this podcast.
Okay. We got it now. But keep it up. Good job.
And it ended up probably being the best meal of the trip. I had a tuna tartare, which was fantastic. And the presentation, when they present the tuna tartare, oftentimes it's just sort of like
It's
like a hockey puck. And it was similar to that also.
This little hockey puck shape of your tuna tartare was on top of those really thinly sliced oranges. And you
I was getting there.
Love.
But that's okay. Go ahead. Just roll on, girlfriend.
All right, I will. So the tuna tartare was on top of the thin slices of oranges. And then pomegranate seeds were just like gently spread around the plate. A few little drops of pesto, which they then clearly took like a little wooden spoon and spread out. So it looked like a painting. And then, of course, edible flowers, basil. It was stunning. So it looked so good. You were just dying to dive in. I was like, wait, I need to take a photo. But I hate to be that person in a restaurant, especially a nice restaurant. So we waited for the waiter to kind of walk away and no one was looking. And I'm taking all these pictures. I'm turning the
rearranging
plate.
Rearranging
exactly.
Glasses.
Yes. And Tom.
And I'm sitting there drumming my fingers.
Finally, Tommaso's like, that's it. It's like, okay. And then you begrudgingly let me have a taste of it. And, Dio mio, delicioso, right?
It was wonderful.
Not only beautiful, but such a fantastic combination of flavors.
Mm-hmm.
And you have eaten edible flowers before, but I was very happy to see you did it again.
Yeah, the zucchini flowers, weren't they around?
Oh, no, that was another day.
Another day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
These were little floral, you know, little purple and pink flowers, edible flowers. So for decor, but you can also eat them. I ordered a risotto with zucchini and peppers and my favorite vegetable ever, eggplant. And it also had some pesto on the side of the dish that you could choose to mix in or not. Same thing, like a little wooden spoon, drew it out. So I put my knife in it and I tested it. I'm like, who doesn't love pesto? Will it go with this risotto? Yes. So I did my best with the knife to mix it in. You really just felt like licking your finger and just like.
I'd like to say that I looked at our analytics today about our Genoa pesto episode. And the word pesto, all right. You have to do, is you can say trucks and buses, pesto, and it will draw listeners, right? So pesto can go in anywhere.
And this pesto was really,
it was fantastic.
Really good. And it was such a deep, rich color. That's the thing with pesto in Italy. It's so dark and rich. Anyway, well, then, Tommaso, you had that spaghetti with scallops, also stunning in its presentation.
And for someone that lives by the sea and eats scallops quite a bit, I looked at it when it came out and the scallops weren't that particularly large, but the flavor from these scallops just permeated the whole pasta. It was wonderful.
Right. But also it had a lot of lemon, garlic, and little bits of pistachio nuts.
Yes.
That was interesting.
It was really, really good.
I will put photos of these dishes I'm describing on Instagram. It's a very good way to get visuals that follow our episodes. So do follow my Instagram account, which is same name, Kimberly's Italy, especially if you like these dishes we just talked about. And guess what else we had that night? A very reasonably priced wine. And shockingly, we ordered a bottle of white.
It was fish. So,
oh, true.
So we.
But I've never paid attention to that.
I know you don't. But in Italy, with the waiters, are going to give you the hairy eyeball.
Exactly.
Yes, you go ahead and
American tourist pay
attention to it. Oddly enough, since we've been home, after we had that really nice whites there from Friuli.
Exactly.
We bought a few more whites.
Exactly. Well, I would like to wait for a little warmer weather, but we did have a tuna dish the other night with some friends, and we brought out a bottle of white wine. They almost fell off their chair.
I know.
They're like, because she loves white. And they're like, what? I was like, I know. We've been converted. Anyway, actually, I think that whole Friuli visit I took to a friend's house years ago when I lived there, it brought back the memories of excellent white wine from Friuli. And Veneto and Friuli are neighboring regions, and they're similar in their climate and their terrain. So I figured should be good. And it was, right?
It was very, very good.
Well, we finished that night with a very long and rambling walk through the city and ended up at Piazza San Marco at 11:30 at night. So this was our first night in Venezia. And we thought, let's go have a nightcap at Cafe Florian to relive our first time in Venezia together. But sadly, they now close at 11 p.m. So we saw a waiter outside, you know, cleaning up the tables, putting the chairs on top, etc. So I went up to one of them who looked like he was on the older side. And I asked, oh, do you close now? And he said, yes, ever since COVID, we close at 11. And so then he was so kind. So I told him the story of Tommaso and I being the last customers at an outside table 25 years ago. And there was a quintet or sextet of musicians who play each night. But to us that night, 25 years ago, since we were the only ones there, we felt like they were playing just for us. And then Tommaso all of a sudden just stood up, took my hand, and we slow danced in Piazza San Marco by ourselves.
Alone. No one.
I know.
I
know that we've shared this before.
But being back there was so nice because the memory is still fresh in my mind of us and Six Pigeons dancing.
Oh, I know. Anyway, this waiter, when I told him that story, he just smiled and he looked at me, he goes, "Che carino." And then he joked and said, I was probably working that night. But sadly, we did not get back to Cafe Florian into Piazza San Marco late at night to recreate that. So we'll go on our next trip.
Yes. In the snow, hopefully, at some wintry night,
yes,
in Venice.
Yes, exactly. The next morning, we took a vaporetto the public boats to the island of Burano. And let me share another travel tip about your purchasing the tickets for the boat. So this is importante. You can buy them online now, which I think is what the city relies on because there are not that many boat docks with a booth that sells the tickets, as in a person in the booth selling a paper ticket. So you can buy them from the Venice tourism site and a few others, and you can choose from a variety of options like a 24-hour pass, which includes some museums, etc., or a 3-day boat pass only, or just one way. And you will receive an attachment with a QR code. And if you don't read the fine print, then you just assume that you'll go to the boat dock and there will be a QR reader there or a person with a handheld QR reader. And that is how you'll have your ticket validated to get on the boat. That's not the case. You have to find the freestanding ACTV automatic ticket machines, as they're called. Sometimes they're close to the dock, like right there visible, and sometimes they're not. At one boat dock, I had to turn around and go to the far side of the large walkway, down a little alley, and it was jammed on the corner. So you enter your PNR, which means your personal code that is on that attachment with the QR code that you received via email, and then you enter the personal code on that attachment into this ticket machine, and then it prints out a paper ticket with the time stamped on it. Now, that all seems a bit complicated and completely counterintuitive since you start with a QR code, which normally means you're eliminating a paper ticket. But that's the way they roll right now, and I thought I'd let you know.
Well, I think Italians have become, they have a QR code fetish. A lot of menus. They
exactly.
Don't give you a paper menu. It's a QR code, which is fine, except the wine list. Imagine our evening in
Verona.
I mean, the wine list was the Gutenberg Bible. Downloading that to your phone each time.
I did hear someone mention that they're slowly getting away from it. And America did it too. I'm sure the whole globe did it during COVID. And the premise was to not touch a paper menu.
Right.
Regardless, it's just kind of quirky and funny, and that's your travel tip about the Vaporetto tickets.
That was a positive travel tip.
Yes, I'm helping you out because we're happy. All right, so our boat ride on the public Vaporetto was totally fine, and it took us to Murano first, the island where most of the glass factories are, then through the lagoon and in between the islands of Mazzorbo and Mazzorbetto. How's that for two names? They're right next to Burano.
I think one of the things is really people don't grasp oftentimes is how big the lagoon is and what the other islands are. And the gentleman we spoke with, I forget who it was, he said the lagoon is now 1/3 smaller than it was at its beginning, because there's so much industrialization around the edges and everything, which is why the aqua alders are so big, which is why Moses is so important.
Right. Interesting. I forget who that was too. Oh, the manager of the Hotel Danieli.
Yes.
Which
we'll
talk about in our next episode. Okay. That was quite the afternoon.
It was a positive day.
It was. We were treated to Aperol spritzes at the Danieli. All right, back to our boat ride. It was a very gray and drizzling day, so that somewhat subdued the intense colors of Burano's houses, which is one of the reasons most people visit. The locals of Burano claim that the houses were initially painted in these deep and bright colors to help guide the fishermen home during fog, and it's very foggy in the winter months. It clearly would have worked since some of them were shockingly bright and we were there on a very dreary day. And Burano is also famous, like Tommaso, for its lace, which they started making there in the 1500s. Their main competitors were the French, of course, but they fine-tuned the craft and kept at it until the demand for lace dwindled a few centuries later. And I'm assuming machines took over. However, there is a museum on the island called Museo del Consorzio Merletti. Merletti is the word for lace. And I knew it was there. I've never been in it, and I don't knit or know how to make lace. I don't do any of that. But I did not suggest this museum to Tommaso because he normally is a museum fan, but I just somehow deep down knew you didn't care about going into a lace museum.
I was very happy to walk around outside, yes.
However, we went to Burano deliberately so Tommaso could see the lagoon and all its islands. And of course, my desire was to quickly run into the one and only church called San Martino for my quick fix and see the painting by Giovanni Battista Tiepolo from the early 1700s. And for those of you that care, in English, most people pronounce his name Tiepolo, but, you know, famous Italian painter. And this painting is right above the, what do you call that? Confessional?
Confessional.
In case anyone wants to see it. This church is simple, but that is there. Also, last little tidbit of the Chiesa San Martino, its bell tower leans quite significantly also. And I will say, after walking around and the few times I was on my own visiting some hotels, there's a few leaners, a few bell tower leaners in Venice. Just saying.
Yeah, thank God no one's gotten, you know, the habit of like going over with the photo thing.
Well, they might. Who knows?
I'm not complaining.
Yeah, right. Okay, carrying on. Yet, one of the other reasons we went to Burano was so Tommaso could have lunch at one of the oldest and most iconic restaurants on the island. I had been there before, molto, molto anni fa, many, many years ago, but I wanted to take him. And you know what? Let's look. I think this is where we should stop because we're running out of time, but we'll leave you hanging here, but promise to tell you about that unbelievably delicious pasta we had, where you mentioned zucchini flowers earlier, and the very personable and hysterical manager and the 10-pound bag of famous Burano biscotti that he gifted us. And we carted that thing around for the next like 6 days. And then we finally re-gifted it to our friends in Copenhagen. Couldn't take it home.
They love sweets. And it wouldn't.
Right. And we'll pick up again next week about our lunch with the older locals of Burano.
But just one thing before we go, I'll be posting a short, quick 2 to 3, maybe 4 minute episode. It's little history hit on the 25th. To tie podcasting of today into a great Italian born 150 years ago
on April 25th?
Yes.
My brother's birthday. What do you know?
It's not your brother, baby, let me tell you.
Okay. Va bene. Grazie mille a tutti.
Ciao, ciao.
Ciao, ciao.